to Refilwe Mpakanyane on 702.
And at 17 minutes past six, it's time to talk National Nutrition Week. Today, the 9th of October, kicks off the National Nutrition Week, and the theme is eat more vegetables and fruits every day. Now, the Association for Dietetics in South Africa has put together some nutritional content. This includes some healthy eating tips, which I'm sure we'll be getting shortly with the help of all the partners involved in this year's Awareness Week. But to give us some insight into this collaboration between the National Department of Health, the Association for Dietetics in South Africa, the National Nutrition, Society of South Africa, as well as the Heart and Stroke Foundation, this National Nutrition Week, I'm joined by President of the Association for Dietetics in SA, Maria van der Merwe. Welcome to Weekend Breakfast. Thank you so much for your time, Maria. Good morning.
Good morning, and thank you for the opportunity to feel well.
It's an absolute pleasure. We are talking something so important, something that we should, I guess, frame as a fundamental right to healthy food, to nutritious food as well. This is the second pandemic year with new variants rising, straining the country. But, you know, talk us through how we should always just be so aware of and prioritize health. And health not through reacting to what is wrong, but preemptively, and that is by eating healthy.
Yes, absolutely. I think the pandemic really brought that to the foreground, and if nothing else, we are more aware of our health and our vulnerability, maybe.
Mm-hmm.
So we look at nutrition. We know that nutrition is a foundation for health, and this year our focus is specifically on eating vegetables and fruits every day. And we know that our vegetables and fruits is an important component of our diet because it supports our immune system. And if our immune system is supported, that can assist us to fight against disease, protect it, or recover from that. So strong immunity is exactly what we are looking at in terms of the benefits of vegetables and fruits. But beyond that, if we look at diseases of lifestyle, like some types of cancer, diabetes, hypertension, heart disease, we also know that fruits and vegetables have protective benefits against those diseases and can help us to also prevent obesity, contains vitamins, minerals, fibers, probiotics, etc., that are all important for good health. So if we can get that foundation right, we are in a better position to fight both acute illness. It cannot protect us against getting an illness.
Sure.
It can strengthen our immunity, yes.
Yeah. Part of the initiatives that have been taken as part of this big alliance that that your organization is a part of is awareness. It includes a collaboration with the Department of Basic Education, and they're promoting awareness and understanding amongst young people that, you know, good food, eating and incorporating fruit and vegetables as often and as much as possible is key to health. But let's talk about the role of nutrition in the growth of a child, in the growth of a young person. We know that and we're going to start, I guess I'm starting on the very early end of that spectrum or that scale. But, you know, things, when we talk about stunting, for instance, and child malnutrition or undernutrition, how big is the problem in South Africa? How big is the problem that the Department of Basic Education is actually dealing with on a daily basis? How does that affect development? How does that affect perhaps learning and progress?
Yeah, I'm going to start with your last question. When it comes to learning, the more immediate impact is from hunger. So if you're sitting on your school bench with a rumbling tummy, you cannot concentrate. And that's where very importantly the National School Nutrition Program comes in to alleviate that short-term immediate hunger to assist with focus, attention span, so that we can get through a school day. But if we look at the broader picture of the nutritional status of children in South Africa, we have quite a range of challenges. So we have, on the one hand side, undernutrition that includes what we call acute malnutrition, where a child's food supply is disrupted due to social circumstances and sometimes due to acute illness.
Mm-hmm.
And they become acutely malnourished. But that's not a massive problem in South Africa, although when that happens, it is actually life-threatening. We have a larger problem with chronic malnutrition, so that is where stunting comes in. So that is where a child over time does not get enough food to actually promote the linear growth. So he may have enough food to get by day yes. by day, but mm-hmm. not enough food for optimal growth. And that, we know, over the long term, has a huge impact in terms of cognitive development. And if you translate cognitive development ultimately into the income potential of that child, we can imagine that the impact, even economically, on the country is quite extensive. So we're currently sitting, over the past 20 years, it has not shifted, mm-hmm. around about 27% of our children under 5 years of age are stunted. So that's an indication of chronic malnutrition, which is complex. It has economic factors, unemployment, poverty, etc. So it's not one that you just address by adding food one day. But sure. we have a diverse interventions in the country towards that. We just need to still see all of those coming together. So it starts with, as you said, right at birth, exclusive breastfeeding for the first 6 months. That's ultimate food security. If mommy is right there, if she's supportive and she's able to feed her baby with the support from the family, taking care of her, because mm-hmm. she is devoting the time and a lot of her actual energy to feeding and nourishing a child. And then after 6 months, to start the introduction of appropriate food. Yeah. So I think there's also a component of knowing what are those foods, what is appropriate, and on the other side is having access to it, being able to afford it. So it is complex because, you know, you deal with social factors, you deal also with such a varied population in terms of inequality in our country.
Yeah.
So that makes it somewhat challenging. So when we do end up having campaigns and messages, we try to make it applicable to everybody across the spectrum and yes. not to make nutrition seem like something for the privileged.
Yeah. And of course, exactly, not to make nutrition seem like something for the privileged, something accessible, something doable. And, you know, with a bit of dexterity and creativity, it absolutely is, right? And also just rethinking your options. And I think, and I just want to focus a little bit still on children, still on the breastfeeding mother, and yes. you know, that continuum of at 6 months when it's time to start introducing solids, and how often even women and families in poor communities will turn to packaged foods from well-known brands because we trust the brand, or it's so ubiquitous. So you think it is a baby brand, it's got to be the best option, as opposed to going to that fruit stall on the corner and buying pumpkin and buying peas and buying, you know, whatever it might be that's available, you know, and cooking that, boiling that, whatever it is, and mashing it up for the baby and introducing that to them as their first foods. It doesn't help, of course, that these packaged foods are often, you know, accessible price-wise as well. So it seems like a good option. It seems like something that might be good for the baby. How do we combat or just deal with, you know, that reality?
I think there's also, again, different components. So on the one hand side, we have regulations in the country that is protecting mom and baby and not mm-hmm. allowing these companies to advertise products inappropriately. Of course, you know, implementation of regulation is another discussion, but we need to start also with awareness for people to know that. So that's one component. When you really look at the regulatory, almost the stick side of it, so not the carrot side of it.
Yes.
But on the other side, I do believe it also starts with information. At some point, the impression was created that mold manufactured and often ultra-processed foods are better options. As you say, food for babies must be the best. So to get that message across and to have consistent messages from authority, in other words, people that can be trusted mm-hmm. to give you those messages. So in other words, the health worker, the radio, the news, all over, to have the same message so that we don't confuse our parents. Because very often these instances are, unfortunately, very high in sugar, sometimes high in salt, and it's not the best option. So to get back to basics, which includes the breast, which includes then, as you say, pumpkin, carrots, sweet potatoes, that's very easy to start with in small amounts. But literally, when you start introducing those foods from 6 months onwards, you start with 1 to 2 teaspoons, 1 to 2 teaspoons twice a day, so, and then build that up for each meal. And by 9 months, they can have about 1/4 cup with each of their meals, and by a year old, about 1/2 cup. So you start small and introducing different flavors, different textures appropriate to the baby at that age. So I think it is all about empowerment for people to understand that natural, as close to, I almost want to say, as close to the soil as possible, versus something that has gone through a lot of processing. Yeah. We actually, unfortunately, nutrients are removed and then replaced, which doesn't make sense if nature provided it in the first place.
Sure. Yeah, back to basics and as simple as possible is often the best option. So those tips that you are, spreading and disseminating throughout National Nutrition Week, when it comes to, of course, you're encouraging South Africans to eat at least or up to incorporate 5 fruits and vegetables in that diet daily. But those tips and the ways in which you're actually making it clear that this is an accessible and realistic goal for so many of us.
Yeah, I think the first component that we maybe just, put out there is an understanding that sometimes ultra-processed foods seem to be more affordable than the good things, the more natural products. So we're looking at affordability and accessibility. So we can also talk about, considering your budget, how do you do this? Because we do have a perception or a reality that fruits and vegetables, fresh ones, are sometimes expensive. So we can look at tips, as you say. Look at what is in season. Don't buy fruits that has to be imported because it's in season in the northern hemisphere and not the south.
Mm-hmm.
But find out what are the vegetables that grow well in your area that are more local, that didn't have to be transported long distance, because that comes with a cost. Buy bulk if possible. Share with the family or neighbors. And very often, if you have access to a freezer, a lot of vegetables can be successfully frozen. So
yes,
you buy bulk,
mm-hmm,
that can be used later. Make a soup or a stew before it goes to waste. So we do, unfortunately, also have a big problem with wastage of our fresh produce. So we need to, also think about, 2-3 generations ago, they didn't have freezers and fridges. And what did they do? They dried. They had ways of making sure that it lasted. They pickled, etc. Mm-hmm. So looking at food preservation, it's a bit simpler these days. As I said, make it into a soup or freeze it, make it into a stew, and then you will have it for a much longer period.
Mm-hmm.
And of course, we're also looking at home food gardening, and if that is a balcony, or that is 1 or 2 containers outside, if you don't have a big garden, to look at veggies that grow easily, and indigenous veggies, they belong here, so they grow easily, as well as spinach, carrots, tomatoes, green beans. Green beans grow very quick, so it's usually the first one ready in the veggie garden. So there are ways to bring that fresh produce closer to home.
Absolutely.
And make it more affordable.
Yeah. We've got, we've just got a listener who sent through a range of pictures from their vegetable garden, from broccoli to tomatoes, going down to beans and to butternut and saying, actually, the more you eat natural foods, you realize the difference between instant and processed foods. And just making the example that, for instance, drinking filter coffee, not quite the natural food that we're talking about, drinking filter coffee for 6 months and instant coffee will never be the same. But absolutely, when you do, you know, expose the palate to natural foods and get used to that, you can absolutely tell the difference in quality as well as the experience.
Yes, absolutely. And also we tend to add a lot of flavorants, or we tend to sometimes add butter and sugar when we cook our pumpkin, etc. Mm-hmm. So that almost, you know, cancels out the benefit of it. So try to cook as natural as possible. Use cooking methods like steaming, roast veggies, for example. The taste changes quite a bit.
Yes.
If you add that little bit of oil and roast it, maybe add a bit of fresh herbs to that. Use herbs, fresh herbs, for taste, rather than opt for adding energy by adding a lot of oil, sugar, etc.
Sure.
So getting closer to that natural form. And of course, a lot of veggies we can eat raw as well, cut into sticks, eat raw as snacks, maybe dip that carrot sticks into a bit of peanut butter for extra taste, or a bit of cottage cheese. Mm.
So adventurousness, so also, and just, trying new things out. Absolutely.
Also for children, you know, to add that bit of peanut butter dip just makes it a little bit more interesting for them to try maybe a celery stick or a carrot or something that you have as a raw snack on hand that's easy to reach and eat and can be accessible to the children.
Well, thank you so much for your time and your insights this morning. Maria van der Merwe is a dietitian and president of the Association of Dietetics in South Africa.